Hello and welcome to the Alligator Sports Podcast. This is the show for Monday, January 10th, 2011. I'm your host, Adam Berry, back in my rightful seat in the host chair. Joining me today, my new assistant sports editor, Greg Luca.
How's it going, everybody? Glad to be back.
And Anthony Chang.
Hey, everybody. I know you guys are happy to hear my voice once again. It's been a long time.
It has been a while, Chang. Last podcast was on, I think, October 12th or 13th. Somewhere in the midst of the football season that went horribly awry, right about the time that maybe listeners would have liked to have known what was going wrong with their beloved Gators, we stopped bringing information to the airwaves. So, Chang, what do you have to say for yourself?
Well, actually, I've prepared a speech. I want to start off by saying good morning, good afternoon, whenever you're listening to this, and thank you for joining me. Many of you in this room are my friends. Many of you in this room know me. Many of you have cheered me or worked with me or supported me, and now every one of you has good reason to be critical of me. I want to say to each of you simply and directly, I am deeply sorry for my irresponsible and selfish behavior I engaged in helping create this Alligator Sports leave of absence. I know people want to find out how I could be so selfish and so foolish. People want to know how I could have done these things to my good friend, Adam Berry, and to my co-workers. And while I've always tried to be a private person, there are some things I want to say.
All right, shut up. You're earning a new nickname, first of all, LT Gray. I'm only going to call you LT Gray from here on. And I do appreciate that. That was a beautifully delivered statement there, Mr. Woods. But yeah, we're back in action here. It's a new semester, new leadership, same old podcast, I guess. We're going to try to bring you one a week for the rest of the semester here. We got some football news to catch up on. Obviously, it's been a huge break since the last podcast. A lot of new stuff happening as we speak. And then a big basketball season, which Mr. Luca is in the midst of covering right now. So let's start off with some football stuff. Since the last podcast, Urban's gone. You all know this. Will Muschamp's in. The new assistant coaching staff is in. Will Muschamp spoke to the media at the Hoops game, I guess last night it was, and he had some sort of interesting stuff to say. Chang, you want to update us on some of the stuff that's going on with him?
Yeah, he spoke to the media for a little bit before the basketball game yesterday, and he said that the football team was close to hiring their last assistant. People are unsure where they're... What position coach he's going to hire, because he's pretty much filled out all the roles. But people seem to think that he has a secondary coach, but he hasn't actually specified like cornerbacks coach or safeties coach. And last year the Gators had Terrell Austin, who was defensive coordinator and cornerbacks coach, and they had Chuck Heater, who was safeties coach. So it would probably, if I had to predict, it would probably be either a safeties coach or cornerbacks coach to kind of like have more of a specific role,
right,
in the secondary.
Yeah, I assumed it'd be on that side of the ball as well, because you just look on the offensive side and you got Charlie Wise is going to be coordinator and quarterbacks, mm-hmm. Running backs is covered, lines covered, receivers are covered, tight ends are covered. Where's the gap there for another coach?
Right.
You can fill that gap on defense, bring in a secondary guy, like a safeties or a cornerbacks guy.
Right.
So I don't know if anybody's brought up any targets.
No, he said that he was going to talk to some people this week. He said he's been busy with recruiting. So,
oh, true.
But I would think maybe by the end of this week, the staff will be completely full. But right now, you have pretty much a good idea of who's going to be on the staff, obviously.
Right.
So
it's kind of interesting that there are no names being thrown about, because we couldn't get away from just like millions of names being thrown around back when the staff was being assembled. And now we're just hearing absolutely nothing about this last spot.
I feel like it's going to be like somebody nobody knows about. Like, we have so many big names on this staff already. Like, it's not probably going to be somebody that... be like, oh, whatever. You know?
Right. Probably so, somebody off another college.
Yeah, exactly.
If, judging by the staff that he's assembled so far, if I had to guess, probably somebody that Muschamp has worked with before.
Yeah.
Or possibly somebody from the NFL. Let's talk about the staff that he's put together so far, though, starting with the guy I just mentioned, Charlie Weiss. Am I saying that right? Greg hates me because I can't
Charlie
pronounce...
Charlie Weiss.
Thank you. I can't pronounce his name, and he's going to get on me.
He's not related to volleyball coach Mary Weiss.
He is not, despite my poor pronunciation of his name. Well, let's talk about that. I think that is an absolute home run hire as an offensive coordinator. I mean, you're going from a guy who is a pretty good NFL offensive coordinator right now, team in the playoffs, coming to Florida, no head coaching responsibility. The pressure's off him to a certain extent. He just gets to coach quarterbacks and run the offense. I think this is the perfect hire.
Yeah, it is. But obviously, it might take a while, because the personnel that the team has in right now is built for the spread offense.
Yep.
And I mean, there's no way around that. Muschamp's been here for a month, you know. So it's gonna take a while to bring in his people. I mean, you look at the quarterback position. Who's gonna run a Brantley? Jordan Reed, who everyone wants, but Jordan Reed can't run a post-style offense.
Jordan Reed could barely run Steve Adazio's offense.
Yeah, an offense that is
About the intellectual jump from Steve Adazio's playbook.
Yeah.
To Charlie Weiss.
Yeah, no.
It's it's going to be impossible for Jordan Reed to put that together. So, mm-hmm. Brantley's the guy built for it right now.
Right. And, I mean, they're bringing in the recruit Jeff Driscoll, who's the number one quarterback in the country.
Nation's top-rated passer, yeah.
Exactly. But he's a spread quarterback. He was recruited for the spread, so who knows? He was a spread in high school. Who knows how he's going to adapt to this pro-style offense? So, I mean, it's a good hire. I think in the end it'll work, but it might take a couple years. I think fans will have to be patient with that.
Right. It's also, I mean, and Muschamp seems to be really focused on recruiting in a very obvious way. I know all college football coaches are focused on recruiting, and that's how you make a great program. But he's very public about talking about recruiting. You know, like when he makes these coaching hires, it's great for recruiting. It's great for recruiting. And Weiss is a big name. He can get guys to the NFL, and he's coached guys in the NFL. You got to think that's going to help with that.
Yeah, I mean, you look at it. Muschamp mentioned it yesterday. If you're a recruit, you look in the NFL playoffs, both coordinators for the Gators are in the NFL playoffs coaching. You had Dan Quinn, who's defensive line coach for Seattle Seahawks, win yesterday. And you have Charlie Weiss currently playing right now, or taping this, against the Ravens as the offensive coordinator for the Kansas City Chiefs. So if you're a recruit and you look there, I mean, do you want to go to Miami where former Temple coach Al Golden is coaching, or FSU Jimbo Fisher? I mean, he's been good, but you look at this, you have all these NFL coaches, former NFL coaches on here. It's pretty impressive.
Right. It was a really strong move as well, because I think FSU had gained a lot of momentum in the recruiting world, especially in the state of Florida. So this is a strong move to sort of take back some of that. Let's talk about the other. You talked about Dan Quinn. Fun anecdote from yesterday from Muschamp about him and Jason Taylor, right?
Yeah, apparently Jason Taylor texted Will Muschamp, who coached Jason Taylor when Nick Saban was a coach at Miami. And he texted Will Muschamp and said that he was just so surprised that he was able to get Dan Quinn and get him to coach the Gators and leave the NFL, because he's been in the NFL for so long. I think it's 11 or 12 years straight he's been in the NFL. So, and Taylor actually credits Dan Quinn for the reason of him winning the Defensive Player of the Year award when he won.
Pretty high praise, yeah. I mean, that's definitely a good hire. It's not as big of a name, certainly, as Charlie Weiss, or as big of a person. Sorry,
there's none.
It's low, man.
I know. I feel bad. I wanted to stray from the fat jokes, but I knew it was going to come at some point.
Okay.
But yeah, I mean, that's a good, solid hire. And let's be honest here, Muschamp is going to be really involved in running that defense. He's a defensive guy. He wanted a guy who's going to agree with him, work hard, develop defensive linemen, which Dan Quinn has certainly proven he can do. Let's talk about the guys coming back from Urban Meyer's staff, too. One of which I understand completely, one of which I'm completely indifferent toward, and the other which I'm vehemently opposed to. Stan Drayton I agree with. I think bringing him back is smart. Running backs and recruiting coordinator. Brian White, whatever. Chang, you probably had more experience with him than...
I mean, we spoke to him once, and he was just—he really doesn't do anything. So it's whatever.
I mean, you know, Aaron Hernandez, they've had good tight ends here recently, so it's fine.
I understand it. Whatever.
It's not hurting anybody. No. He's a pretty good recruiter.
Yeah.
And then the other one, DJ Durkin, linebackers coach and special teams coordinator. I'd argue that the special teams last year, when he took control from Urban primarily, were the worst they've been under Urban. And I'm not wrong in making that statement, right?
No.
The linebackers last year should have been a promising young group, made seemingly no strides.
It was basically the weak link on the defense, I think.
Right. I mean, yeah. And the defense was pretty good,
okay,
but if you had to pick
a
weak link, I'd say the linebackers were... They weren't special, as special as they could have been. And UF has always had at least one or two good linebackers in the past, as long as I can remember it. And yet, seemingly, in all Will Muschamp's genius, he decided to bring back this guy, who I feel like he could have made a better hire, especially as a defensive guy.
Yeah.
I can't possibly approve of that one. But, again, he's young. Maybe he sees some promise. Maybe he's a good recruiter. I just don't understand it right now.
Yeah, I don't either. And especially, even last year, I really don't think Durkin had much control over the special teams.
Really?
I mean, Urban Meyer would come onto the sideline and be in the special teams huddle and kind of kick Durkin out, basically, a lot of the time. So, I mean, I don't know. Durkin is, he's, like you said, the linebackers coach, they weren't impressive. Special teams wasn't impressive. So why keep him, you know?
Right.
And then you have Chuck Heater, who was a safeties coach for I don't know how long at UF. Jeez. Pretty much a staple here.
Yeah.
And he did, you know, he's produced some really good safeties. You look at it, Major Wright, Reggie Nelson. I mean, Will Hill was not
that good. I was about to make a Will Hill joke. Black.
But he's done pretty well, you know, and he seemed like he was working really well, and everyone thought he would come back, but I guess not. I mean, I was really surprised when they didn't hire him, they elected to hire Durkin instead.
That's an unusual move, and I don't understand it. I don't know if it's, you know, him coming in to make sort of his own, you know, it's his guys now. Yeah. I don't, you know, try to remove all right. Urban's legacy or whatever. I don't understand that. Chuck Heater was a good coach, a good guy. Yeah. Seemingly would have been nice to have some level of continuity yeah. from like a veteran guy instead of relatively new guys. So don't understand that move. Everybody's going to miss you, Chuck, especially the media. I never had the pleasure of speaking to you, but everybody says you're a great guy. So don't understand that move. And then obviously they brought back Mickey Marotti, the director of strength and conditioning. Seemingly
it's
obvious.
Expected, yeah.
Right.
He's been really good.
Let's talk more about the how the personnel left with the Gators right now fits in with this team. We mentioned the quarterback thing before. Do you think it's Brantley next year?
I think it has to be at this point. I mean, at least to start off the year. Like we said, Burton's obviously not going to play. He doesn't even throw in Meyer's offense.
Right.
Jordan Reed can't grasp Charlie Weiss's offense.
Right.
And then you have Driscoll, but this is going to be his first year. He's used to running a spread offense in high school. I'd be shocked if he took the first snap on game one. It's going to be Brantley. I mean, everyone says that maybe it was the spread's fault for his lack of success. And as one of Brantley's biggest supporters before the season, I will finally admit that he's just not that good. Like, if you look at it, he makes stupid decisions. He doesn't look off his receivers.
No.
He's not a really good leader. I honestly don't think, like, many of the players respected him that much.
He looks like he lacks confidence.
Yeah, he lacks confidence. Like,
he looks scared out there.
Yeah, he does. And I just don't see him leading this team next season, especially with the schedule they have against Auburn, Alabama, LSU. Like, I don't see him leading this team to any sort of, like, big level of success next
right.
year.
But if you do need a guy back there who can get under center.
Right, and that's why it has to be him.
Yeah.
He's the only one.
Well, to me, it's tough to say who we think it's going to be, because even if Urban Meyer was still here, we would have no idea.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
So then when you bring in a new coaching staff, they're going to have their own separate evaluations of these players. Plus, then there's a whole long spring for all of them to grow and develop and change. And then whoever picks up the offense better, it's really tough to speculate right now at all.
I just think under Meyer, you would have maybe Reed would have a much better shot at starting because
right.
he's built for that offense. He's better tailored for the offense than Brantley. Like, he should have played instead of Brantley this season,
right.
I think, at a certain point. He can run, he can, you know, do his little short passes, he can do this the handoff option play, you know, so I just think that now with Muschamp, the pro-style offense, you really don't need a mobile quarterback. You need a quarterback that can stick in the pocket and kind of pass down the middle. And really the only guy that can do that right now is John Brantley, as sad as that is.
Yeah, it's a scary stance. It's a damning statement for the future of Florida football.
That's why I think that, I mean, it has to be him.
Right.
I mean, like Greg says, we don't know. Maybe Reed all of a sudden turns into this great quarterback, turns into Cam Newton, and he wins the Heisman next year, but who knows?
Right. Somebody compared it. I think John Gruden compared him to Cam Newton on the Outback Bowl telecast.
Didn't he also call Sharif Floyd like
Sharif Brown?
Sharif Brown.
John Gruden was saying,
I don't trust that guy.
No, he was saying a lot of nutty things on that broadcast. I'm just throwing that out there.
Big fan of Mike Pouncey, though.
Oh, he loves Mike Pouncey. Boy, does he ever. What do we think of the rest of that? I mean, we'll run through the rest of the staff here. Aubrey Hill, former Gator, coming back, was a Miami receivers coach,
yeah,
I believe.
He was a Miami receivers coach and also their recruiting coordinator.
Oh,
so it was a bigger hit for Miami than like a bigger
right.
hit for, you know, Florida.
Yeah, it's a bigger loss for Miami than a bigger game for Florida. But that should give them some ties into the South Florida recruiting area, which is always nice. Receivers-wise, coming back, they're going to have a lot of guys that they need to develop. Andre DeBose, he's going to have to learn how to run routes, first of all. Like, that's going to be critical to his development, the ability to learn to run routes.
It's pretty big. It's pretty big for a receiver.
Right. So you got to think, they got a lot of work to do there. Rest of the guys, Travaris Robinson from Texas Tech, defensive backs, Frank Verducci, offensive line coach and running game coordinator. He was unemployed last year, but he's had a pretty good, pretty solid career before that. And then, as I mentioned before, Brian White at tight ends. good staff. We asked the poll question to our readers, and dozens of them responded. How do you rate the staff? Better than last year? As good as last year or worse than last year? Just on paper.
I would say better because you have a lot of NFL experience on the staff. You have a lot of proven guys on the staff. A lot of big-name guys there and attract recruits. I mean, last year you had Steve Adazio, who, I mean, in his first year as offensive coordinator, he really left a lot to be desired. You had Terrell Austin.
You could say that, yeah.
In his second year of offensive coordinator, he left a lot more to be desired. Right. And you have Terrell Austin, who had NFL experience, coached with the Arizona Cardinals, but, I mean, he wasn't like a big-name guy like Charlie Weiss or even Dan Quinn, who has more of a reputation than Terrell Austin.
I'd put him somewhere on the Quinn level because he was, what, cornerback's coach for the Cardinals?
Yeah.
So it's like similar, but I guess Quinn sort of comes with a reputation.
I really don't know much about the man, but like he seems to have more of a reputation than Terrell Austin.
Right, probably longer career.
Yeah.
Greg?
Adam, you left out the fourth option on that poll, which is at least Steve Adazio is gone.
Oh, that's right.
And which received 39% of the vote, and you can count me among those people. So I'm going to go in that category.
That's fair. I'd say I'd agree with Chang so far. Well, actually, I'd agree with both of you. First, at least Adazio is gone. You don't have to worry about that anymore. And also, I just say better from top to bottom. I mean, Scott Leffler proved himself to not really be worth anything. He seemingly made Tebow worse in his first year, and then, you know, just got himself involved in an absolute disaster of a quarterback position last year. So I got to think top to bottom, it's probably better off. And you keep guys like Stan Drayton, you know, I'd say it's probably better. I don't know anything about Zach Azani or those guys who are moving on.
I mean, it's like you said, you want some continuity on the staff, and you have to keep like two or three guys for that. So, I mean, he did that. He brought his mix of guys. He left some guys on staff. I think he did a good job.
Right. The only guy, obviously, as we mentioned, Chuck Heater. That's the only way this staff could get better. So maybe that'll be the last coaching hire. Not really. Absolutely not. It won't be.
No, definitely.
That's just us wishful thinking.
But can we close the chapter on Adazio and say that Temple made a pretty good hire by hiring him? We criticize the guy a lot. Can we say that Temple made a pretty good hire?
Here's the thing. Maybe, if he brings in good coordinators, maybe.
He's the offensive coordinator. What are you talking about?
Yep. He's a great coordinator. Maybe they'll be okay. The thing is, if you have to trust him to run your offense and coach your line and coach your team, you're in trouble. But if he is like purely an administrator, purely like the hype man, you know, in charge of the team, maybe. It's all about the maybe.
Great hype man.
Like, he's a great
head coach.
Hype man. Yeah.
If he takes on that role,
yeah, you just
Temple could be good.
One dose of vitamin Adazio and Temple's through the roof.
He's the next Tony Sperano over there.
Yeah,
there you go. That's a perfect comparison.
Yeah, it's awesome.
That actually is. Yeah, that's spot on. Nice work.
Just offensive line guy, just yelling at people, that kind of thing.
Right. Yeah. That reminds me, though. My first thought was when people, like the Temple media, heard about the Steve Adazio hire, and maybe if they were unfamiliar, you know, they were living under a northeast rock or something, and they were like, oh, man, Florida's offensive coordinator. This guy, Coach Tebow, held together the number one recruiting class in the nation. This is awesome. And then Steve Adazio shows up for the first press conference and starts talking about the pickle boat and everything, and they're just like, oh, my God. How did this happen?
That's great. Imagine him. Imagine interviewing him as a head coach every day.
Right.
That's great. That's a great beat to be
in. Best of luck, Temple. All right, let's move on. Talk about a little Florida basketball. Greg, you're our man on that. We have not talked about Florida basketball at all on this podcast, I don't think, because before it came to its premature end, basketball season had not yet begun. Greg, just run through where we are so far in the season. How has Florida done up to this point, and then sort of especially emphasize these last couple games?
Well, considering the schedule they played against, I think they'll tell you they've done pretty well. A little bit below expectations, I guess, when you come into the season ranked in the top 10.
Right.
But overall, pretty solid. The loss to Ohio State doesn't look bad at all. They're probably the best team in the nation right now. Maybe Duke, but anyway, it's another topic. Loss to Central Florida isn't looking as bad since they might still be undefeated. And the loss to Jacksonville, that's another topic. But got a couple big wins in there against Kansas State and Florida State. And just lately, back then they were struggling with turnovers, struggling with three-point shooting, struggling with ball movement and working together as a team. And then since the Xavier game, where they've won at Xavier, then they won at home to Rhode Island, and then last night against Mississippi, they've shot the ball from three-point range much better, 42% over those games.
Wow.
And they've done a very good job of handling the ball. They have 41 assists and 20 turnovers over those four games.
So that's what Billy wants, 2-1.
Much better
assist turnover ratio. Yep. Wow. So what can you tell any difference on the court watching them play? Like, what changed that? Is it just them finally gelling?
See, it was very early in the season. It was like people were being too selfish. And then they were taking turns. They were almost taking turns on offense. Just give it to a guy. He'll find a shot. Probably not the best percentage when you're going 1-on-5, taking turns doing that.
True.
Then Donovan got on him after the Central Florida game, talked about how they have a bunch of guys that, quote, make nobody better. A lot of other things about how they play too selfish. And so from there, they started playing too unselfish, where they just stand around the perimeter and pass it back and forth until late in the shot clock and they have to do something stupid.
Right.
So now it seems like they've actually finally found a pretty good balance of that. And although the half-court offense still struggles at times, when they get the five starters out there, it looks like they can do some pretty good things offensively.
Right.
It seems like Parsons, too, is kind of like the catalyst to this, too. Like he, I mean, I know you're probably going to talk about this, but he's played better lately. And I think, like, that success helps the offense run a little more. Like, when he's struggling, missing shots, and, you know, having, like, 5 turnovers every game, the offense is not going to be efficient. But, you know.
I'd argue it's not so much when he's missing shots. It's when he's not taking shots. Yeah. He took, what, 4 in the was it the Xavier game or the game before that? He went 2-of-4.
Yeah, there's games where he doesn't take a lot of shots.
And it's outrageous because he's a high-percentage shooter.
Yeah, he's shooting, it's almost 50% from the field for the season, even if the three-point hasn't been there all the
time.
And
the free throws, yeah.
But it's interesting because I remember when I was covering the FAU game early in the season, Kyle, a former Alligator writer, asked Billy Donovan, do you need Chandler Parsons to take more shots for this offense to work a little better? And Billy was like, no, this offense runs better when he doesn't take that many shots, which I thought was like kind of confusing because you would want your best player and probably your best shooter to take more shots.
Right.
Well, at that time, I think it might have been right because Parsons was shooting really poorly from 3 at that point and just his confidence wasn't there. And those shots were going to waste when he was taking them. There was a couple of air balls in there. It was a bad showing for a while.
But I'd argue his, like, he shouldn't be just sitting behind the line and jacking up threes. Like, when he's penetrating, when he's taking short shots, when he's going to the free throw line, that's when the offense is at its best.
As long as he doesn't airball those either.
Right.
Yeah.
He's on the table.
He's become a lot more aggressive lately. Just since the last loss against Jacksonville, just the way he's been crashing the boards, he's averaging 9.5 rebounds per game since then, just crashing the boards offensively, skying, fighting for every ball. It's pretty ridiculous what he's been doing lately, effort-wise.
Good Lord. Macklin lead the team in rebounds, or does Parsons lead the team in rebounds?
Parsons leads the team in rebounds after that spurt, yeah.
Wow. All right, and then run us to the Mississippi game. That's the most recent one. That's the start of SEC play, obviously the SEC West. Not quite as strong as the SEC East, so we think, but... what were your thoughts on that game and sort of how the SEC season started off?
Well, it really was a lot of the things we've been talking about so far. For me, it was the three-point shooting and the assist to turnover. They had 22 assists and 7 turnovers and then went 9 of 18 from three-point range, so that's how they got the win. They 77-71 last night. Got conference season started off the right way there.
And Irving Walker, pretty nice night for him. He's had a pretty decent scoring stretch here recently.
Yeah, he's the leading scorer so far this season, 14.3 a game. Had 20 last night, which put him over 1,000 for his career, so that's a nice little milestone for him.
All right, and then Scott, you pointed out another stat. Scotty Wilbekin, freshman point guard, who I, to be perfectly honest, didn't expect to do anything this year. I expected him to be Nimrod Tishman 2.0. Had a nice game without scoring, necessarily.
Yep, only 2 points, but 6 assists without a turnover. Played 21 minutes, which is good because a large part of the criticism last year was that they couldn't find time for Boynton and Walker to get any rest at all, playing like 35 minutes a game or whatever it was.
Yeah,
so if you can bring Wilbekin in there to play 21 minutes a night and not turn the ball over, he's doing his job, even if he doesn't always score. And maybe that'll come with time.
Yeah, but take a shot, Scott.
Like, Chang is angry.
He's open a lot of the time, and he just looks so hesitant out there. Like, let it loose. I mean, you know, this team doesn't have great shooters. Kenny Boynton is a streaky shooter. Chandler Parsons is a pretty good shooter, but it's not like you have a sharpshooter. This team is full of sharpshooters. Like, take a shot when you're open. Make the defense respect you. It'll probably help the other players on the court.
So, right. The way I think about it is he's like 17. He's literally 17 years old.
Yeah.
Like, he should be a senior in high school. If you have Vernon Macklin out there and he's 26, you just don't feel like you should be doing much
this,
as far as scoring.
This is his choice, man. Yeah, this is his choice.
Hey, they needed him more than he needed them at this
Vernon
point.
Vernon Macklin's not actually 26, is he? He's like 24?
He's
old. Like,
he's,
don't get me
he's
wrong.
He's very old.
He was like old for his year, and then he's a redshirt senior.
I think it's 24 or 25.
Okay. Good lord. Yeah. And Scotty Wobegon.
He's an old man.
By the way, with the Scotty Wobegon thing being 17, look forward to a rash of stories come March, April, of Scotty Wobegon should be going to the prom right now.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
There was actually a chant when he was in the game yesterday that the student section was chanting jailbait.
Jesus.
Yeah.
Wow.
Exactly. Yeah.
How was the stadium yesterday, by the way?
It was a better atmosphere than I expected, honestly, because all leading up to it, there was all kinds of talk, like, we can't even get the full student section, but the students turned out pretty well, I thought. It looked like even in the upper section, it was pretty packed with students.
All right, because that's something we've talked about, especially on this podcast, dating back to its inception, was Florida basketball support has generally been poor since the 04s, really. You know, I mean, it's a lot of things. It's, you know, not a football... You know, it's a football school and so on and so forth, and football is the social experience you want. Are fans going to come around for a team that's been good 2 years in a row?
You would think they would, but even last night, the SEC opener, teams playing well. The loudest cheer was when Muschamp came out and got introduced to the crowd.
Right. Well, that's to be expected.
It's really a football. It's a football school, and I guess that's never going to change, even if you win back to back national championships and then come back and put another decent team out there.
But you don't remember the ravings of it's a basketball school now too. Back in 07, before your time.
After yesterday's game, I had to do a story on Chris Warren, which is an Ole Miss player from Orlando, and I was waiting there by their locker room, and their coach, Ole Miss coach, actually came out. And they were talking. He was talking to somebody on staff, and he was like, "Got pretty loud out there today. It wasn't full, but it was really loud. It was like one of the loudest I've heard the Connell Center in a while." So I thought that was pretty. It was really. It got loud at certain points yesterday.
That's a step in the right direction. Because I mean, obviously, you know, we're coming from an unbiased perspective here, but like, this can be a very good basketball team. This team can be a lot of fun to watch. It can also be a lot of fun. It can also be really bad to watch at times, but. Like, you'd like to see more excitement around a team like this, especially after a pretty crappy football season. So I'd encourage Florida fans to go out there and watch the basketball team.
Yeah, if they play the way they played the last couple of days, they can actually live up to that preseason billing, potentially.
That's where I was heading with the next question. Is this team better or worse? I mean, obviously not as good as the top 10 preseason ranking, I wouldn't say. But where do you see them finishing just at this point? Obviously early projection, but
it's really tough to say. I mean, in the SEC, it's difficult because there's a lot of moving pieces. Not really sure. Yesterday was an interesting day because Tennessee, Kentucky, and Vanderbilt all lost.
Right.
Those are all teams picked to finish pretty high. So I actually think there is parity in the SEC this year, more so than there has been in the past. And a lot of how Florida does is going to depend on the development of the freshmen and whether a streaky three-point shooting team keeps playing well or poorly.
Let's talk about some of those freshmen, since you mentioned them. Probably the most hyped guy was Patrick Young, big forward. Let's talk about him. How's he done so far? Billy had some interesting things to say about him in media earlier this week.
Yeah, Patrick Young's apparently has come back with a new attitude and a new desire to improve and perform well since the Christmas break. He came in facing a lot of pressure. He was hyped as a McDonald's All-American, played for Team USA, that kind of stuff, was one of the top recruits. And then there was a lot of talk about how some people thought he could be the SEC's Freshman of the Year, which seems pretty silly at this
outrageous,
point.
Yeah.
But just, he came in, and you could tell his offensive game wasn't polished, and he wasn't... When you come in out of high school, and you're the best thing about you is that you're a physical player, there's always a physical adjustment to college.
Yeah.
So just when your top attribute has to make the biggest adjustment, it's just going to be a learning stretch for you. And... he's come on a little bit lately, but there's still a long way to go, and it's hard to believe he could live up anywhere near his preseason billing this year, but he could still be a useful piece for that.
Right. What were his offensive numbers like in high school? I remember you said like his points per game, surprisingly unimpressive.
It was something like, it was in the low teens at best. It was 12 or 14, somewhere in that range, which I thought was ridiculous because if you think about a guy getting 14 rebounds and he's going to be the biggest player on the court every time,
yeah,
you should be able to get 6 or 8 points just off of grabbing the ball and putting it back in.
Right.
So
which may have been what he did.
In terms of offensively, you're scoring like 4 to 6 points a game. That's not a very good number.
Right.
So.
And I think he averaged like 2 to 4 points when he was on Team USA. So another unimpressive stat line.
So the thing is, Patrick Young is not a bad player, but too much was put on him at this point. And this is the thing I was talking about. Billy said Patrick Young is underachieved just based on the expectation. He's been okay. He hasn't been good. He hasn't necessarily been terrible either, but he's just been okay. But he's underachieved simply because of the expectations. Whereas a guy like, did he say Will you get? Has overachieved simply because people, myself included, had no idea what to expect of the kid.
Well, and because he's been really good. He's the team's leader in rebounds per minute. Again, another guy that offensively looks lost a lot of the time. I'm going to be honest about it. Like, when he has to play against the zone, and he's in the power forward position, and they want to flash him in the middle and play him at the free throw line.
Oh, yeah.
He's not equipped to get the ball there and find a guy for a shot. It's just not something he knows how to do at this point.
Can he shoot?
But not that he's shown.
Yeah.
Just all he does is get rebounds, but he leads the team in rebounds per minute, if you want to look at it that way. So does a good job when he's out there with that, and just the effort hustle stats that they've been talking about since the first day of practice. That was the biggest thing, was Willie gets hustle, and it's showing on the court so far.
Somebody had to replace Dan Werner. Will you get can do it. Let's go through some other freshmen. We talked about Wilbekin sort of already being impressive. Casey Prather was a guy I had a lot of expectations for, which I may have been wrong.
It seems like all the freshmen have done the opposite of what their expectations were, but Prather is another guy that the first couple of games, or one of the exhibition games, he was really the story of that game. Grabbed a bunch of offensive rebounds, was flying around the court, got a couple of putbacks, and really, since then, has mostly disappeared. There was actually a game, maybe it was two or three games ago, where he had a pull-up jumper, he drove to the basket, he had a floater, he had a huge dunk at the end of the game, took an outside shot. It was like, you can see that he can do all the things, but just, he hasn't been getting a lot of minutes because he was billed as a great defensive player and really hasn't shown it that much to this point. Huh. He's been okay in the press, but not as good as they expected with the Corey Brewer comparisons he was getting.
That's where I was going, yeah.
So we'll see what happens with him, but right now it's been not up to expectations, but the potential has been shown to some extent.
All right, who am I forgetting here freshman-wise?
Larson, who...
Redshirt,
yep. So nobody who's seeing the court.
See you next year, Cody. Returning guys, obviously the big deal with this team was bringing back the starting five. They beat that into the ground before the year. And so far it's had, differing results. Yeah, I mean, you got Vernon Macklin has been, I think, pretty consistent and steady, which is the one thing that he was not last year. He'd have outbursts for, I think, 22 against Ole Miss and 20 against Mississippi State, and then he'd score four, grab two rebounds, and foul out. So how far has he come?
He's been very good about the fouls. That has not been a problem in a game this year that I can remember. And he's done a pretty good job on the rebounding. Also, he's been a guy where when they need a basket, if he's singled up down there, you can throw it into him and he'll score with the hook shot. It's been very consistent this year. He's done a really nice job with that.
And then the opposite of that, Alex Tyus, the black hole, now not featuring Predator dreads.
Right. The new look Alex Tyus is is just as inconsistent as the old look Alex Tyus. Really, it was something where I want to say it was the Xavier game, which was the first game where he came out without the dreads. He scored the first 6 points of the game, and it was a thing where Donovan said that they wanted to get him more shots and get him more involved in the game and get him more involved in the offense.
That's a bad idea.
And it seems like every game since then, he's taking a couple early shots, except the difference is this time he's not making them.
Right.
So just they're trying to find a way to make it work with him because he is a very talented player, and he shows plenty of flashes when he gets a nice rebound or has a nice dunk, and you can tell he's a talented guy, but he just hasn't put it together, hasn't always made smart decisions, things like that.
I forgot who sent me, it might have been you, sent me the message that one time when Tyus was going off. I forgot Alex Tyus was actually really good at basketball.
Right, you never see it coming when he does good because there's so many times where it's just like turnover, not paying attention,
misguided 18-foot jumper.
Right.
Yeah, that's what Tyus does, and I called him the black hole because he sort of is one on offense. The ball goes to him, and it doesn't go anywhere else except poorly at the rim, you know?
It'd be interesting to chart the amount of possessions where he touches it compared to the amount of possessions where he shoots. Like, it's every time he gets it, he actually shoots the ball. Like,
right.
There's not, like, he gets it and then he finds another guy.
Right.
It's like, this is where they're going with it if he touches.
Right. Whereas I've been impressed with Macklin as a passer out of the post.
It's something where they've wanted to run the offense inside out. It was something they talked about going back to the preseason. And he's always, I felt like even last year he was a pretty good passer, but something Macklin's definitely done a good job with this season to find some open shots, because after a lot of teams, they try to put one guy on him for about 3 minutes, and then he's got 8 points in the first 3 minutes, and then they start doubling, and then he can pass it out and get an open shot for somebody.
He was pretty good at that last year, and if he really improves that, he could have a pretty decent NBA future.
So are we saying Tyus is the opposite of Scottie Wilbekin?
Yes.
Okay.
If we could, like, switch their meds, I think we'd be in a good situation.
Yeah, we could, like, find a good middle ground for them, and that would be perfect.
Right.
Yeah.
The rest of the five, Chandler Parsons, obviously we talked about him. He's the lifeblood of the team, I'd argue. And then again, I have my reputation for writing and talking about Chandler Parsons goes way back.
Anyway, he had a lot of criticism to start the year, because coming into the season, he was the face of the team. He had the buzzer beaters last year. Seemed like a real triple-double threat. It was one of the early games, maybe it was UNC Wilmington or something like that, where he got close to a triple-double, and everybody thought Parsons was going to be that guy. And then every game, across the board, his stats have been less than what was expected. He wasn't rebounding as well as they thought. His assist to turnover was poor, and his points were 2 or 3 per game lower than they were last season, even though he was shooting a decent percentage. Because the three-pointers weren't there, and the free-throw shooting wasn't there. And he just seemed to have lost confidence. Maybe it was the pressure with the new expectations of him, but something just wasn't right for him. But the last couple of games, it seems like he's turned it around a little bit.
I actually talked with a couple players about that after Monday's game, the Rhode Island game. And Patrick Young said something very interesting, I thought. He said that Parsons sometimes might be thinking about his NBA future, and he's trying to play how people want him to play. So, of course, Parsons, kind of skinny, won't play the post in the NBA. He wants to show that he has an outside shot. In reality, Chandler Parsons' outside shot, average at best. His strength is going inside, and that's what he should be doing. He should be doing what he does best, not what other people think he should be doing.
Yeah, when I was looking at a little bit of the NBA draft projection stuff before the season, it was like Chandler Parsons, second-round pick, could make his way up to the first round if he can shoot better. So then...
First round?
Yep.
Wow.
Hey. There's not a lot of guys who are 6'10 and can move like that and drive to the basket that way. Yeah.
That's the new Chandler Parsons, is 6'9 swing man who can shoot three for a long time podcast listeners. None of whom are in this room. All right, go ahead.
Anyway, like I said, he's been a lot better lately, and if he can find the three-point shot consistently, maybe he could move up into that first-round range if he can keep rebounding and he can keep being smart with the ball and keep making good decisions. But like Adam said, his best strength is driving to the basket and creating for his teammates. And so he can't do that unless he can be a threat to shoot from outside, or else everybody will just play off him. So
that's true.
It's something that he has to be able to do at least to some extent, or he has to try to do at least to some extent, even if he's not hitting them.
Really think he's a first-round draft prospect?
Personally, it's possible.
Okay.
If he can, let's say he shot like 40% from three.
Right.
Like he was a legitimately strong three-point shooter.
Yeah.
Then I don't see why not.
Okay.
But judging by the way he's playing so far, he's...
No, right. Definitely.
I mean, yeah, but like based off of what you saw, if he made moderate improvements from last year...
It would not have been unreasonable to expect that.
Okay. Yeah. All right, I might agree with that. But yeah, based on what he's shown so far this season, I'd say no. But if he can somehow pull a 40%... you know, three-point percentage, then, and stop airballing free throws. That would also probably help his game out a little bit.
It's been a while since we saw those. Actually, the whole team's gotten a lot better from the free throw line. Macklin was at, like, 28% or something ridiculously low. He's pushed it up to 40, 45. So, I mean, that's not great, but when you think about how low it was, you have to do pretty well to boost it 10 points that quickly. So.
Right. And then the two guards, I feel like I group them together just because they're always on the court playing 35 minutes a game. Kenny Boynton and Irving Walker. How are they doing so far?
I'm not sure it's fair to group them together anymore because one of them has shot the ball well and one of them has not. So we got Irv at 45% from three, and then we have Kenny at 28%. So it's interesting because before the season it was, well, Irv needs to become more of a point guard and just distribute for everybody else and get more assists, fewer turnovers, that kind of thing. And it was Kenny Boynton has a new shooting stroke, so he's going to do better from outside. And it really hasn't happened like that at all.
Yeah.
Coming into last night's game, Walker had only one more assist than turnovers, which is really, really bad when Donovan wants him to be at 2-1.
Especially in non-conference when you're playing a bunch of patsies. Yeah. Right.
Well, they did, I mean, tough schedule.
They played some good teams, but you're also, like, Irv should never turn the ball over against UNC Wilmington.
There should be North Carolina A&T games when he goes for, like, 11 assists and 2 turnovers that boost it up, and that hasn't happened. So. Yeah. Boynton just hasn't shot well. He's been streaky. It's a thing where our fellow Gator basketball beat writer Kevin Brockway likes to talk about how Boynton is better shooting when he has a hand in his face. And I honestly think there's a measure of truth to that. Made his third consecutive 4-point play.
What is the deal with that?
Last night, just 3 games in a row, he's had one of those. So something where he just has to feel it and be in rhythm and not be thinking about the 3-point shooting. That's the thing with a lot of them. I think Walker is... Boynton's confidence is in and out. Parsons' confidence is in and out. Irv is a guy that I feel like is really confident out there and has been the team's leading scorer so far.
He's probably the steadiest guy as far as... I mean, definitely as far as shooting.
As far as scoring goes, yeah. That's why it's a thing where if Wilbekin can come along and they can play Walker off the ball, then that could be something that could work really well for them down the stretch later in the season.
At the same time, do you want Kenny off the... Well, Scotty's... That's the other thing I want to talk about. Scotty's a good defender, right?
Right. Scotty and Kenny are the team's 2 best defenders. Some people have said that Wilbekin might be better, but I think we still have to give it to Boynton until proven otherwise.
Yeah. Because I was going to say, at that point, then, Irv could still play point on defense and Scotty could guard the more athletic 2 guard, which is pretty good trade-off if you're going to have Boynton off the floor.
Yep, and also there will be times where players like maybe Macklin or Murphy or Tyus or Parsons gets in foul trouble, and they can play 3 guards. They've done it before, so that's another option they have with the 3 of them playing pretty well.
Just a very small lineup. And then the other guy you just mentioned I completely forgot about because he's injured right now is Eric Murphy. I believe I even told you he's going to make the big leap from freshman to sophomore year, and we haven't really had the chance to see that.
Defensively, we've kind of seen that. He was leading the team in blocks when he got hurt. No longer. He's been passed by Macklin, but he was doing a good job defensively and doing better in man-to-man, which was something that was a problem for him last year, right?
Yeah, definitely.
So then, and then also the fouls have been down. As a team, all the fouls have been down. That hasn't really been a problem for them. And we expected to see Murphy with the 3-point shooting come along. He said he did it a lot in high school. Did not have an attempt his freshman year, right?
I honestly don't remember. I think he may have taken one.
Maybe 0 for 1, 0 for 2, something like that. But so far this season, only 3 for 12, and that was something that we worked on a lot in the offseason and thought he was going to be very good at, and it just hasn't shown it to this point in the year.
Well, the comparison to him was always, Billy would always say, he's going to be Matt Bonner. Like, he's going to be a Matt Bonner-type player, and so you would expect sort of an outside shot to... I never expected him to be a 3-point shooter, but I expected him to take maybe all these jumpers Tyus is taking. I feel like Florida would be better off if Murphy was taking those, even right now, before Murphy works on it more than Tyus.
Yeah, maybe take some of the Boynton shots, too, because there's plenty of those.
Right, there's a lot of Boynton-Tyus shots to go around. Do you have that stat offhand of how many shots, what percentage of the team's shots are taken by Boynton and Tyus?
I do not have the percentages on me, but I know that Kenny Boynton leads the team with 178 field goal attempts and 94 three-point attempts, whereas Parsons is third with 120, and Walker is second with 129. Wow. And then in terms of three-pointers, Walker is second with 78, and Parsons is third with 35. He's taken a high percentage of those shots, almost 40% of the threes off the top of my head here, it looks like.
That's fair, because I would want Kenny and Irv taking more threes than Chandler, even.
Right.
I was going to say Eric Murphy had zero.
Zero?
He shot 0 three-pointers in his freshman year.
Okay. I remember Tyus randomly took a couple threes last year and went like 2 for 5. That's what I was thinking. Yeah, of course.
Right.
That's what I was thinking of. But you want Boynton and Walker taking your threes. Parsons can, you know, take that. I'd say that's a pretty fair percentage right now.
Right. Maybe get a little more to Parsons and a little less to Boynton, but it's difficult because it's something Donovan talked about was you can't tell Kenny Boynton to stop shooting because when he gets hot, gets hot. Right. You know, he'll hit a few in a row and that'll really help them. Like against Kansas State, he hit 3 long jumpers in about a minute and a half and really put that game away for them. So something he can do when he's feeling it.
All right, any other observations about the team heading forward to the SEC season? What's the next game? South Carolina at home?
The next game is Tennessee on Tuesday, which should be interesting because nobody knows what Tennessee is up to ever. So without Bruce Pearl, it's going to be an interesting game.
That's right. How long is Pearl out for
Pearl is out for the next 5 SEC games, I believe, but he gets to come back and coach them against Connecticut.
Right,
which is
not
yeah.
That's fair. And then, yeah, then Florida comes back home against South Carolina in a rematch of the Chandler Parsons buzzer beater game from last year.
Yeah, we're due for another one of those, so stay tuned, everybody.
Yeah, how have you gone all season so far with no Chandler Parsons buzzer beaters? The concept is foreign to me.
It's ridiculous.
He won at the end of the half yesterday.
Oh, did he really?
Yeah. Right. It was pretty good. I didn't hear the buzzer, though. It felt like the clock just ended and there was no buzzer. I was disappointed. I was waiting for it.
It's a very uneventful buzzer beater.
It was terrible.
All right, we're going to introduce a new segment for the spring. We got a new. This is a whole new podcast, practically. We got a new theme song, which you heard at the beginning of the show. We're going to splice clips into that.
It's funky.
It's very funky, as I like to say. And then we got a new segment here at the end of the show we're going to try to do every week called Intro to Sports Journalism, a little play off the fact that we're student journalists, damn fine student journalists, as the old theme used to say. And we're going to talk about one topic each week, 5-10 minutes, whether from our experience as student journalists or just sort of our take on things in the journalism world, in the sports journalism world that we've seen. So we're going to start this week, a very appropriate place to start, as Greg pointed out, as how we worked our way up the beat ladder, which is to say how we worked our way from covering, say, cross country, golf, tennis, to sitting in front of a microphone in a very small, dank room talking to dozens of people via this podcast.
That's how we know we made it.
Right.
It's at least 20, Adam. Give yourself some
credit. I said dozens.
That's okay.
You know,
so at least 24.
Right, at least 24.
Okay.
All right, so let's start off here because it mirrors the real world in a way, in the sense that you start off on a low beat most of the time, preps, if you work in the old world of newspapers. You'd work on preps, and then you'd work your way up to like a college, and then a pro beat, and then a columnist and whatnot. Here, it's sort of the same thing, just really accelerated, where we start on, like I said, those small beats before, and then you work your way up to the legitimate, quote-unquote, men's basketball, football, columnists, and whatnot. So let's tell our tales of how we got to where we are now. And let's start with Greg, since you're a noob.
So, what I did was just my first week here, first week on campus as a freshman, I just knew I wanted to get involved with something sports journalism. And it actually started before I even came here. I sent an email to the editor before my first semester, which I guess was Evan Drexler at the time.
Right, I was assistant at the time.
And he told me that this is like really the only way to get involved and it's the best way to do it, and that even if you don't get hired right away, you can cover like club teams or whatever you can find just to show that you want to do it and you care. So I came in the first open house, brought my high school clips, eventually got hired to cover tennis. And that was interesting because it was a situation where they were hardly ever around. It was the fall tennis season,
right?
Which means they play a lot of tournaments all over the country, and they only had one or two home matches that year. I mean that season. So it's funny because at the lower levels, they're so eager for you to cover them. The first day I came out to meet the team or whatever and do all my preseason interviews, the coach came up to me and just gave me his phone number and said, if you ever need anything, just call. I'll talk to you after all the matches or during the week or whenever. We're happy to have the coverage. And it was the same thing with the women's coach. So they're just really happy for you to be there. And that's something that's really nice about the smaller sports. And then from there, I got promoted, I guess you could say, up to softball, which was very interesting because it seems like everybody, if you look hard enough, they all have a little bit of an interesting story to tell you. Like, my first story with the softball team was about Stephanie Brombacker, and she had the funny story about the grunts and how she had to stop and ended up in the hospital because of it, and it just became a nice little thing. And from there, all I could really say, if this was going to be an advice sort of thing, would just be to work hard, because I did a lot of stuff with statistics, and I showed up to every media availability, and I covered all of the 5 games a weekend at some times, and just ridiculous things like that that took up a lot of my time and energy. But apparently the editors noticed, and it worked out that I got moved up to basketball, or I moved up to volleyball for the next fall, and then that transitioned nicely into basketball. So just work hard at the lower levels, and then it comes along pretty naturally.
Look at you now, the assistant sports editor, Adam Berry.
Woohoo!
Wow. It's going to look great on a resume.
Oh, yeah.
And Chag, where you come from? I hired you.
Yeah, you did. But I applied my freshman year like Greg, and I was rejected. So I came back with a vengeance. And
a very quiet vengeance, I might add.
With a mission. And Evan Drexler, former Alligator Sports editor and podcast guru, decided to hire me. And I started off with golf.
I've told the story to you before, but the real story is Evan actually push for the hiring of Chang. I thought you were too quiet.
Yeah. Whatever.
Hater.
Just hating.
Clearly, I was wrong.
Yeah. Well, a little bit. I'm quiet.
Yeah. But, you know, I was wrong to say we could hire you. Yeah. Maybe. I don't know. We'll see. You got a whole other semester ahead of you.
That's true. I started off with golf, men's and women's golf. It was nice. It was definitely a good way to get started, like Greg said. And they like that, like tennis, they gave me their numbers. I would call after every event, talk to the coach, had the players' numbers, talk to them. Just really learned on the beat. Like, I mean, there were only like two events in Gainesville, so I was not able to like actually go and cover events, but I would keep track of them online, call after, learn different ways to write, different angles. So that was really a good start for me. Then I went on to volleyball. Covered it with my good friend Adam.
That's Barry. Right.
Had a great time with that.
Took you under my wing.
Yeah. He was definitely the person that helped me learn a lot. He was the guy that was there for me and gave me advice.
Oh, so. Save it for the last show of the semester. We'll cry then.
And then from volleyball, I went to baseball. Wrote that with Tyler Jett, who's current columnist at the Alligator Sports staff. Went from baseball, which is, I would say, my favorite beat out of all of them. I loved covering baseball. I think it was a good mix between a small beat and a big beat, where you had the perks of a big beat where people kind of cared, and then you had the perks of a small beat where it was a little less like impersonal. It was kind of more personal, so I liked that. And then from baseball, I went to football, and football was just this big circus. I mean, it was fun. It was definitely fun writing about something that, you know, people read about every day and right. care about tremendously. But, you know, it has downfalls too, where it's just crazy, like media access is very strict and players don't say anything and it's just a hassle with everything. But it was, everything had its own meaning and taught me something different, and like just getting that experience to move up every semester, that was definitely a good experience for me.
That might be a topic actually we come back to in this segment in the future, is best like favorite beat.
Yeah,
because hopefully we can get somewhere where we haven't all three covered volleyball, we've all covered something different. Mm-hmm. But yeah, that'll be something we look forward to in the future as well. For me, I started off here in a summer 2008, which, by the way, makes me officially, I learned the other day, the longest tenured person on the Alligator staff right now.
Who?
Yeah, that's terrifying. I'm the elder statesman of this group. a horrifying realization.
Is Tyler with you or no?
Tyler started late that summer.
Late that summer, okay.
I started off as a copy editor because I came in, much like Greg. I just said I wanted to get involved in sports journalism. No matter what, whatever it takes. That was after my freshman year. Came in and begged to then-editor Brian Steele. Said, I'll do whatever. He said, you can copy edit. A fall writing spot opened up toward the end of the summer, cross-country. I was like, that sounds not glamorous at all, but I'll take it. I did it, and I had the same small beat experience you guys had, which was you get the coach's number, you like friends with the players on Facebook, with the athletes on Facebook, and you actually talk. And if I can draw a parallel to the real world, that is preps. Like, you get coaches' numbers and coaches call you, and then you everything's very close. They want the coverage, and you're helping them, and they're helping you. It's a very, like, symbiotic relationship in a way. So I moved up from there to softball, just like Greg. Covered that. Had a really good time with that. I'd draw the parallel to that with what Chang said about sort of being somewhere in between the big beat and the small beat. Maybe not quite as big as baseball, I'd argue, but when you go to the Women's College World Series, definitely it seems like a little bigger, a little more of a big deal. And then I go from there to volleyball, and then with Chang, and then volleyball to basketball.
Dynamic duo.
Dynamic duo on the volleyball beat. And from there to basketball, and then I betrayed and murdered the Alligator for an internship. It was away last fall. I would have been on football, obviously, but then came back and as a columnist. So sort of a very natural rise up the ranks. I'm not doing the meteoric rise that Greg Luca here has enjoyed, nor of a former colleague and current roommate, Mike McCall, who went from, swimming to baseball to football in his sophomore year. Mike graduated, by the way. He wrapped up his fourth year covering football, was it?
Fourth season.
So it's a little bit of everything. It's that way in the real world, too, in journalism. Like, you talk to people who have been covering preps for 20 years, and then you talk to somebody who's, you know, got in the business 5 years ago and they're covering the NFL and the Major League Baseball.
But usually you're on a beat for a little longer than, like, us. We're on a semester and we know we're going to get a different beat the next time. Unless you're on football where there's nowhere else to go. But it's a little different where you never really gain, like, a really great relationship with somebody because you're on it for such a short time, you know, for one season and it's done.
Right.
So it's a little different, but, I mean, it's necessary.
Right, just to keep, like, new people in and give people different experiences and to prepare us as students, because it is a learning experience, to prepare us for the future where you have to cover a lot of different things. And I know that certainly helped me out at the times covering high school stuff, because you don't just cover football, you cover soccer, basketball, volleyball, golf, swimming. No hockey down here, Greg. None of that. But, yeah, that's the little intro to sports journalism. The first quote-unquote class is dismissed. All right, let's wrap up the show here with our majors and wandies. Let's see if I can remember the award names, first of all. The Major Wright Awards for Excellence in the Field of Sport and the Wandy Pierre-Louis Bad Angles of the Week.
Sounds good to me.
Right. Nailed it. All right, we're going to start off, since I'm back on the throne, we're going to start off with the majors because I firmly believe in ending on a bad note, and we're going to start with Chang.
All right, I'm very excited this week to say that my major goes to the Heatles, who have won 20 of their last 21 games after a 9-8 start, have had a meeting.
Your childlike excitement over the Heatles is so wonderful.
He's like over here rocking in the chair.
Everyone said that LeBron James and Dwayne Wade couldn't play together for the first 17 games. Well, they were right for the first 17 games. It was they're a little quick to judge because they have taken the NBA by storm and have have beaten opponents by double digits the majority of the time during this streak. They've won 12 straight games in the road, or 13 games in the road. I think 13 straight games in the road. Are three away from tying the record for most road games and road games won in a row. So I will give my major to the Heatles.
So Spoelstra's not going to get fired then?
No, definitely not. Even though Mike McCall and I do own FireEricSpoelstra.com, I did that only as a win-win because if they would lose, I would gain money off the website. Right. If they win, then they win. They
you just never have to use it.
Exactly.
There you go.
And are they better than Boston and San Antonio, real quick?
I mean, Boston's beaten them twice. That was during their like 9-8 stretch, so I don't know. I would say still Boston and San Antonio are better, but I think Miami could beat them too, so who knows?
I mean, they're the Heatles. Anything could happen.
Yeah, they're the Heatles. I mean, they sell out crowds all over the place. I mean, they're just the number one attraction.
They're right fanning now. Up down there.
Yeah, fan up. Fan up, Miami.
I hate you, Greg.
All right. My major is going to go to the Seattle Seahawks, mostly because I'm pretty sure Marshawn Lynch just broke another tackle. One of the more incredible runs we've seen in some time. Just for a team to go 7-9, I mean, they didn't decide that the rules were if they win the division, they can make the playoffs, even though they're 7-9. That's just how it worked out. And they said they don't really care. They're just going to win anyway. So I hope they go to the Super Bowl. Let's go Seattle.
Wow.
I mean, there's no chance that happens.
No, absolutely not.
But let's go.
Wow. Rick Stroud, who covers the Bucks for the St. Pete Times, tweeted that was the most impressive playoff run he's ever seen.
I saw a lot of people tweet that.
Really?
Yeah. I still have not seen the run, surprisingly.
What?
Yeah. I'm like the only person on this earth that has not seen the
Unbelievable.
Run.
Unbelievable.
It was hilarious. It was 15 minutes before the basketball game tipped off. Chang and I were both there covering it. And I run out there and it was a commercial. I run out there because they have the TV on in the back in the media room for us. So I run out there, I plug my laptop in, I get everything going. And Chang's sitting there like looking at game tracker, and we know the game's about to start, but I still wanted to see the ending. So I'm like, Chang, I'm going back there. I got to see this. And he's like, all right, I'll wait. I'm staying out here. And the first play I get back is this crazy run from Marshawn Lynch. And I'm just thinking about Chang sitting out there watching warm-ups,
watching
Unlike
a game.
Greg, I was doing my job watching to see if Patrick Young was making his hook shot that night.
Listen,
so I could.
It's gonna. All that matters is what happens in that 40
make
minutes.
Now you miss all of them.
Figured, yeah.
Chang would know.
There you go. Yeah. Thanks, Chang. If not for you,
see,
we wouldn't have.
Go.
Yeah. See, that paid off. All right, I'm gonna give mine. It's a little more boring. I'm gonna give mine to Will Muschamp. I think he did a great job hiring the staff. I love the fact that he refers to himself in the third person. Thought it was a good hire for Florida, although I didn't at first. Everything he's done so far is seemingly on track, and the only reason I feel bad for him at this point is because he might have Urban looking over his shoulder. So let's do the Wandies. Start with Chang.
I'm gonna give my Wandy to someone that is very close to me right now. Actually, is sitting about 2 feet away from me.
Physically,
Physically, yeah.
Certainly not emotionally.
Not emotionally. I'm going to give it to Greg Luca, the current assistant editor of Alligator Sports, for taking my spot on next to Adam Berry's side.
As my right-hand man.
Before Adam took the internship in the fall, last fall, I was set to be his assistant editor. He left me there in the cold, and I was the editor that semester. Never got a chance to be assistant editor, so now I have to be the copy editor two nights a week and watch Adam and Greg work together.
Form such a beautiful relationship.
Form a bond. And I'm just left there in the corner.
Listen, if you're going to be mad at somebody, I don't see why it wouldn't be this guy. He's the one who abandoned our paper, then came back, and then picked me.
No,
so
it's you.
I don't know what you want.
It's you.
Why is not him?
Because if you weren't here, I would be there.
We could just unite it. We could overthrow him.
All right, girls, take it outside.
All right.
Greg, whatever. You're Wandy.
Mine is going to go to...
It's, by the way, I still love you, Che. You're all right. Greg?
Mine is going to go to Miami Dolphins owner, Steven Ross, who just completely butchered the whole coaching search, if you want to call it that, situation.
Butchered is strong enough.
Apparently, he thought that if he interviewed people and talked to people like John Gruden and John Harbaugh and all these people, that nobody would notice.
Yeah.
He didn't expect it to become a national story that the yesterday. Dolphins are looking for a new coach. Why would that make news?
Does he think he's like a secret agent, like doing this really covert? Like, right. Oh, nobody will know.
Right. I have no idea how he can get a plane out to Stanford.
And secret
nobody,
meetings under cover of
nobody's
going
to understand how that... And then, like, okay, so what they're going to do is they're just going to give the bad coach an extension. That should fix it. We'll just keep Tony Sperano around longer. That should do it.
Enjoy that.
Perfect solution.
As a fellow Dolphins fan, I second that award. They deserve it this week.
That's fair. All right, I'm going to wrap this up with mine, and you're all probably wanting to give it to the same thing right now. I'm going to give it to my illness right now. You've heard the coughing. You've heard the stuffy nose. You've heard the sniffles. That's me. Because, see, I never get sick. And then naturally, I come back to UF real fired up about starting the semester as the editor. Got a lot of big plans. Get sick pretty much the first day of school. That has hampered our plans to, record this podcast, say, which we would have done on a different day. We would have had it out to you earlier, listeners. Record our upstart, overly ambitious video show, which we will do next week. And generally just affected my life in a negative way, so... My Wandy goes to this illness, and I hope that I don't pass it on to anybody else.
It's Greg's fault you're sick.
It's because of Greg you're healthy. Adam wanted to work through the illness, and he never would have gotten better. But now we're not going to miss any papers because he's still alive.
That's true. That would have been a disaster had we if not for your wisdom, Greg.
I'm not ready to carry the load on my own. We need these two.
All right. Well, let's wrap the show up officially with telling you to send any feedback you have to podcast@alligator.org. Anything you have to say, we're listening. Even if you just want to celebrate the fact that we're back, which you probably don't, but if you do, let us know. We're also on Facebook at facebook.com/alligatorpodcast, Twitter at twitter.com/alligatorsports.
My Twitter is Chang_reaction.
I'm at Adam D. Berry.
And I don't tweet, so it doesn't matter.
Greg has a Twitter, but he doesn't tweet. Eventually, we're going to get him on the Twitter bandwagon.
We'll get that to you in a little bit. Stay tuned.
Yeah, stay tuned for Greg's Twitter. But send any feedback to podcast@alligator.org. Any suggestions if you like the new segment, if you like the new intro. If you just want to say it's funky, I'll appreciate that. And we'll be back at some point next week. Thanks for listening.
End the show, Barry!